You're listening to the Vegans Explore Network, found at vegansexplore.com.
I want to thank Vladimir Michkovich, who is the co-founder of Juicy Marbles, and he is the chief brand officer for the company as well. And I have to say, I tried it last night. Amazing. It's exactly what you think it should be. So let's talk a little bit about that. What made you want to develop you have a wide range of items in your catalog, but let's just talk about the first item that you created and what was the genesis of that?
The first product we came out with, we make plant-based whole cuts, and the first product we created was a marble fillet steak. The reason why we went with that one first, it wasn't because, well, we knew how to make different things. So we developed a technology with which, maybe not even technology, more like a process with which we can obtain these, this texture that has like these fibers that are very akin to whole cuts such as steaks and ribs and chicken and so forth. And we had prototypes of ribs and chicken and different steaks before we launched the first product. But then we were thinking, okay, so we're a small company. We're not going to be, you know, we're not going to have a big capacity in the beginning of, you know, having the luxury of economies of scale. So we thought that maybe it's good that we come out with like a cut that's considered premium. So to help us with the first steps, I'm going to make a weird comparison here, but like similar to Tesla and the Roadster, you know, it was just something to get attention, I would say, and showcase what we can do. And I think it was a good showcase in the sense that we showed the texture capabilities and that we can do this marbling and that you have a great maillard, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, effect of the crust formation and the browning. And I guess it was also like, you know, the fillet is the crown jewel, allegedly, of the steaks. So we wanted to be one that kind of pokes holes at I don't know what's possible and the benefits of plant based and any kind of food. You know, you quickly start seeing stuff not just about animals. You also see stuff about the environment, health, all of the things that kind of were very persuasive to me personally about adopting more and more and more plant-based. And then, you know, also when these Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat came with all these products, you know, it wasn't to me anything other than like, oh, wow, cool. I was still eating meat at the time, but I was like, this is sick. You know, this the concept to me seemed genius. And I think, okay, this is definitely the future, having been aware of all of these things of, you know, having an overly animal-centric diet, what kind of effect it has, not just on animals and the environment, but also on people, because in order to sustain this animal-based system, basically, we take 80% of the food that we grow from and feed it to livestock and exchange only 17% of worldwide calories, which seemed crazy to me. So even if I am to remove myself from the animal liberation argument of it, which I think is important, and solely focus on people, there's still plenty of reasons to cut down on meat, at least. I would say for me, I knew that I wanted to do it significantly. I also felt better. But I wasn't really ever thinking about becoming a vegan or not becoming a vegan. I was just kind of by all of the arguments pushed almost to the point of being completely vegan, but I never really was thinking, what am I now? Or that I just feel it's the arguments and the values are right. And I want to gradually, for me, move towards it as much as I can. And also I wish to see the world move in that direction for all of the reasons stated, right? So I guess that would be the story.
So yeah, so I happen to have in my hands the product right now. This is how it looks. It's been a little wear and tear on my end, but we have the Juicy Marble Baby Ribs. So tell us a little bit about this one.
Okay, so baby ribs is my favorite product that we've ever made because it has a super clean label and it is super fun to eat. So we developed, we noticed that we have a little side stream of protein that was going to waste. So our R&D team has managed to find a way to take this pure protein and turn it into something that looks like bones. So in effort to think about, you know, I'm not going to say that we were motivated by managing protein waste, which is completely edible, but that was part of the reasoning. We just made these prototypes at some point for fun and games, and we sent about 500 or 1,000 of them just to curious eaters from our community. And the feedback was so good that we then took a year to perfect the recipe. And we made, because the main feedback was that they wanted also a cleaner label. Basically, they really loved the sensory aspect of the product, but people had a problem with carrageenan and methylcellulose. So, you know, they're not harmful, but some people report tummy aches. You know, there's, let's just say that the clean eating community has labeled these as no-nos. So we worked really hard to see if we can replicate the same juicy texture without them, and we succeeded. And we also then added zinc and selenium. So now, not only do you get this luscious, succulent texture that tears off the bone, you also get all of the essential micronutrients, all of them, the important, some of the important ones like zinc, selenium, iron, vitamin B12. So, baby ribs is a merger of both. It's unseasoned, so people can do whatever they want with it. I love making pulled pork with it. I just tear it apart with my hands and then marinate it and sizzle that. But I also really do love, we have a recipe online, maple bourbon glazed ribs is absolutely bonkers, fantastic. So yeah, I'm already getting into the zone of just hyping recipes, but yeah, that's baby ribs.
And I noticed you have a Nutri-Score of an A. So what is that? That's the first time I'm hearing of that.
Oh yeah, that's a European thing. So in Europe, that's there's the kind of labeling system. How nutritious is your product? And A is the best score. Long story short. So we put that on there because we got it. It's proof
Why
that it's
not,
nutritious.
Right?
Yeah. No, Europe has very strict rules about these things, and there's a lot of different bodies and things like that we need to adhere to. So one of the things that you get tested here is a Nutri-Score, and you don't have to put it on your label, but everybody in Europe is starting to do that. So kind of if you don't do it, it seems like you're hiding something. Mm-hmm. But you know, why would we hide such a beautiful score?
So that takes us to the next one. We have the thick cut fillet.
Thick cut fillet. Yes. Fillet.
So tell us about this one. And I think I've seen this at a restaurant. Ah, yeah, that's where I've had you guys first. You guys, different restaurants carry your product, right? Like they actually serve
it. Probably.
I think I had this at Love Life Cafe. Do you do business with them in Miami?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know all of the deals that the sales team makes. To be honest, it's quite possible. Yeah, the fillet was our first product. Didn't we talk about the fillet in the beginning, or was that before we started recording?
It could have been before. If not, I can edit one of them out.
Yeah, because I think I told the whole story why it was the first one and so forth. I think, yeah.
I think just talk a little bit, now that you told the story, just tell them a little bit about like what are maybe some best ways to use it, you know, how to prepare it, you know.
Yeah. Well, this one is great because you can just straight do a little salt and peppy and put it next to your favorite sides and have a quick, juicy protein dish that doesn't take a lot of time to make. But I personally have been using it a lot. I sear it on the pan whole, and then I'll cut it into little slices, and then I'll just give them a little sizzle just to get a little more crust. And then I'll put that on top of like either a carb or a salad. It depends how I feel that day. So I really just dance with the sides depending on what. So, you know, whatever people like, but I really like it on top of a salad. I like it with polenta a lot. Mm. Polenta is my jam. But, you know, this is subjective. But I would say prepare it in a way where you get a lot of crust. It's still subjective, but I love crust. So I would say, you know, if you chop it up into little slices even before and you just sizzle them on each side, the way to do it. You know, the crust is where the truth is at.
So as we wind down this conversation, one of the things I do want to talk about, since you are the brand, you know, chief brand officer, what are some of the things that you would recommend that has worked for you for other brands and different businesses that are out there to get their products into stores? Because I know I have worked with a couple and that's their biggest priority. So what are some advice that you can give out?
Can you be a little more specific, please? Like, what do you mean, like, to get product into the stores?
So I want to give you a specific example. So I work with an individual who's making cupcakes, like vegan cupcakes. Mm-hmm. And they just got the packaging. They're working with distributors and they have their system in place. Now they're starting to reach out to different vegan markets, to different places. So what advice would you have? Because I feel like that's the biggest
struggle. Okay, I understand. Yeah, yeah. So I think the first thing that people need to clarify for themselves is who they want to sell to. So if they want to sell to vegans and they don't want to branch out of that alone, that's one system of thought that you develop. If you want to go further, which we're doing, and I think I can offer more advice on that. So we don't want to sell to just vegans. We want to sell to anybody who enjoys good food and, you know, is open, let's say, protein curious. I think you have to think a little bit differently. So the way I see it, everything is a symbol. So everything that you communicate, everything you put on your packaging carries a symbolic value, which happens over time. Certain words gather cultural meaning. For instance, you know, we talked about the word vegan and how it got a lot of negative reputation in the mainstream culture. It doesn't matter what the reasons are and how it got there, but it's there, right? So, you know, I think if the communication is towards omnivores, I think talking about, for instance, about animal liberation, the environment, using words like consciousness, and anything, you know, like even that word. Yeah. So all of these things, they just become attributed with certain sets of beliefs. So I think just thinking about what you're putting out there as your communication in this deliberate way of thinking, I'm crafting a bouquet of symbols and dissect them and see what they mean. It's everything. It's every single word you choose can be loaded for somebody. So, you know, obviously harmony is beautiful. Consciousness, let's be conscious, you know, and mindful and all of that, you know. So these are great concepts. But I think when we're launching a brand and if our audience is X, we need to think about what they think about these words and what they might mean to them. Right. And then craft that bouquet that it doesn't make the person not like you just because you maybe used a green leaf for a logo. You know, it would suck because I bet the muffins are great. Right. So it really depends. If you want to go broad with the product and if we want to see more of the world eat more plant-based foods, I think we need to ditch anything that reminds people or might make them feel like their identity is being challenged. So thinking about people's identities is very important. I think people don't want to switch identities, but they do want to try new foods. So make them curious about your food and don't be so focused on the fact that it's vegan. That would be my main advice. It doesn't matter, because if people end up eating your product for whatever reason, the movement made a little wing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's how people will warm up, I think, to eating more plant-based and then perhaps even one day thinking about becoming vegan, if that's anybody's goal, you know. But it's really just make great food and present the food as a food company. That would be my advice.
I mean, I think that's very sound, and that's what I hear from a lot of people when it comes to expanding and growing and scaling. And the other piece that you hit on is knowing your audience, you know, taking a deep mm-hmm. dive into your audience, because maybe your audience is vegans, but you have to also know what comes with that. That if you're looking to focus mainly on vegans and you're hoping to have, you know, 25 million people, you know, gravitate to what you're doing, there's probably not even 25 million vegans out there in the world. And so you probably want to hit 100% of every single vegan. You have to set the bar to where it needs to go. So that's like for us with Vegans Explore, we are catering to the vegan community. And I've developed a program called Pre-Vegans, because I'm looking at, yes, you have these two different camps. And is there a way to create that inclusivity at the same time being a stand for veganism? Mm-hmm. And that is the result of conversations I've had where it's very clear that I'm vegan, SoFlo Vegan, Vegans Explore guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more interested in hearing where you are, like that, the kind of the conversation I was having with you earlier. It's not a point of, I'm not attached to how you live your life. I'm more attached to if you're open for me to be able to have a conversation with you. And that's how I gauge whether or not you're open, is just ask you a question, see how you respond to it. And then I shift, I add something, and then I move on. And I'm saying this not just to say this is what I do, but for the same reason that you provided that advice, I'm providing advice for people who are listening right now, is because I know you're probably hearing what conversation that we're having. And it's like, well, I'm going to be a stand. Everybody's got to go vegan. And what if there's a way that people be interested in going vegan and you can make them feel like they're on the inside?
Well, I think there's a lot of different angles to come in. I definitely, again, as I was telling, you know, I wasn't, when I saw vegan blogs like 15 years ago, I wasn't like ideologically shocked by it. I thought it made sense because my background I wasn't surrounded by people who were just hating on vegans, and there wasn't this whole culture yet developed that I think became like an allergic reaction after plant-based meat became popular. So I had that privilege, and I find activism important. I don't think I would have learned many of the things that I learned about food and the food system had it not been for vegan activists. But it's also vegan activism to somebody will be the worst way to get into it. And that's why I think we should be happy that there's all sorts of brands out there that anywhere on the vegan spectrum, you know, some are very activistic. Some don't even mention it at all and just have a product that is vegan. And I love that there's all that diversity, because different people will get into it different ways. Ultimately, we're interested in impact, right? And having a positive impact on our society, on all species, on the environment, on our food system, on the food that we eat. And, you know, there's a mix of interests that people have, and some people are more persuaded by the environmental argument. Some people are more persuaded by animal liberation. Some people think about feeding all of the people in the world, and then they realize, animal-based system is literally only feeding the rich. And if we want to distribute our food resources to all humans, we need to cut down on meat bigly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not an ideological statement, I think, at all. I think it's like, I mean, do we want to feed all people? Do we want to end hunger and famine? And if the answer is yes, I think we need to be critical of the food system as is, and also what we eat. I think what you're doing is great. And if it wasn't for blogs and podcasts such as yours, I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. And thank you for your service, sir.
and I'm an advocate for all of the people that are in our community. And one of the people that we represent heavily are, and I would say, content creators, influencers, people who are using their gift of creation, my baby, of content, media production to inform the world. So where are you guys right now? Because I've spoken to a lot of companies and I feel like mm-hmm. there is a shift in strategy in terms of how people are working with content creators. So for people who may be interested in reaching out to you, what advice could you give them in terms of what you're maybe looking for? What's going to increase your opportunity to collaborate and work with you? That information.
Oh, we're very open to all sorts of collaborations. You know, I think the main thing that we're looking is passion for food. I would say we don't, you know, you're either vegan or you're not. It doesn't really matter to us. It's like if you have a passion for food and you have an audience that's curious about making cool stuff. They love making food for themselves, for their loved ones, for family, friends, all that, kids. Reach out. You know, we're agnostic about that. I think the main thing that we care about is that people, if we send them our product to do anything, is they have a passion for making amazing dishes. I had to say it through my teeth. That's the main thing that we, I think, are looking at, like gauging. It's like, are you in it because you love food? Or do you just do because that's a popular thing to do? And I think that's easy to kind of distinguish on social media, like who really likes the cocoa, who's just trying to monetize on a strategy based on a YouTube video or something.
A lot of people listening right now are feeling triggered.
Sucks.
All right, so I want to thank you again for being on this podcast, for having this conversation with me. One of the things that I do before you provide all your information on people can try the product is I do a moment from the heart, and that's just your opportunity to close the show with whatever you want to relay to our audience. But before we do that, where can people find more information about Juicy Marbles and everything that you have going on?
I would say just hit us up on Instagram. That's the place to be. If you don't have social media, we have a website and you can buy our meats there. I think that would be, for me, the best outcome. All of the relevant information is on our website, and all of the irrelevant information and videos of me dancing is on Instagram.
Nice. More than like people want to go to see the dancing. That's where we are. So that brings us to the final segment. As I mentioned, the moment from the heart. I'm going to give you an opportunity if you need some time to collect yourself or you want to jump right in. It's your call. But as soon as you're done, the last thing you say will be the end of the show. Mm-hmm. So thank you once again for coming on, and I appreciate you. I'm looking forward to trying the fillet. And I'm also looking forward to creating some cool creations on video to put out there as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, man. I don't know if this is to the whole world or maybe just to our community or something, but I sometimes see comments underneath our posts where maybe like a troll comes and starts dissing plant-based meats, or not even a troll, just somebody who's skeptical about it and is misinformed. And I often see people go and lynch this person. Just absolutely demolish them with rational arguments about how they are wrong, how they are a murderer, accomplice, and they need to see the light. And then at some points, rarely but extremely, the conversation comes to a level of threats. But that's not the point. So that makes me kind of sad, because I think that person is not going to, there is no positive outcome from raging online on underneath and trying to convince anybody. And I've always been kind of, I would say, almost a hater of rational argumentation. And I don't think we're rational beings. So I think I would persuade people to think a little bit more irrationally and a little bit, I don't know what's the opposite, emotionally, and just think about where people are coming from and be compassionate even to the people that we don't agree with, and just let them be. I think we need a period as a humanity where we all just need to let each other be, because we're all trying so hard, each for our own cause, and it seems that now the weight of the whole world is on each of our shoulders, and it's very burdening for people. So I would say that vegans need to be more compassionate towards meat eaters, and meat eaters need to be more compassionate towards vegans. And saying that, I'm literally using the phrase that I hate so much, is, and it's dividing people into vegans and meat eaters, which I really, really do not like, because that has never historically been the case. And these are not homogenous groups of people. And we get asked that a lot also. Who do you make this product for? Is it for vegans or is it for meat eaters? And like, I don't see it that way at all. I think within the group of people who eat meat, there's a lot of different people, and it's same goes for vegans. And we shouldn't make assumptions just based on people's diets. And I just hope that people would chill online and don't use comments for ideological warfare, at least not underneath our Instagram posts. Go out there and play with a ball, or dance in the kitchen. Just don't do that, please.